The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I can tell you, marijuana is nothing more than a gateway drug.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Georgia Congressman Buddy Carter speaking about marijuana as the House voted to legalize the drug. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a few minutes in the first hour. I'd love to get your take on it. I saw a stat this morning that said 60% of Americans are in favor of legalized marijuana. It's also divided by party line, too. It seems Democrats are more in favor than Republicans. But I want to look at the legalization of it. I think it's coming. I think the federal ban on it's going to disappear, and I think it's going to go down to the states. But I want to zoom out, too, because what does it mean? What's it mean for the future of the country? What does it mean economically as an industry and a tax basis? What does it mean for your children and your children's children? Are there mental risks associated with marijuana? I'm going to be joined by a physician a little bit later, and we're going to take a look at the medical aspects of this as well. What's it do to the body? What's it do to the brain? What's it do to one's drive? Also, what about the morality of it? Do things change now that it's legalized? How does it differ from, let's say, having a glass or two of wine, right? Do the moral parameters for smoking weed change if it is legalized? So we got a lot to get into. We'll go through that. You're more than welcome to join me. Here's the number all day. All right, anytime you want to get into the conversation here, it's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. A lot of news to get to, too. I want to tell you about the Holy Father. I want to fill you in on something that Bill Maher has said. You know, I love words. And I've had this conversation with you many times. One of my great frustrations is when I see certain political parties or the media or others co-opting words. I thought one of the most brilliant co-opting of language was by the Culture of Death when they took the word choice and they made it a positive for killing a child, right? They suddenly it was about being pro-choice, right? And the, on the other side of the aisle was pro-life, right? Really, pro-choice was a misnomer for being pro-death, right? But who isn't pro-choice? I'm pro-choice. I'm all for life. I'm all for decisions. I'm all for informed, you know, decision-making and consent. I mean, you're about choice. Choice is freedom, right? Choice is not death. You can choose to do that, but why don't we call it for what it is? And then language began to change, right? Abortion was such a dirty word. Nobody wanted to talk about abortion, right? Oh, no. So what happened? They used these fancy words like reproductive freedom, reproductive justice, right? All these different things. There's a women's right. There's a strange thing now going on in the culture, and I'm just putting this on your radar. I'll continue to bring it up as I monitor it and see it in greater detail in the days ahead. But a lot of House Democrats are coalescing around a bill to turn into law the Supreme Court's decision legalizing most abortions, Roe v. Wade, right? And they're voicing their support of that decision. We know that. Those who support the culture of death don't want to see that fall, right? But what's really strange is, you know, I get so frustrated by the use of, you know, the language, right? Reproductive freedom, reproductive justice. Well, guess what? Some really far left liberals, they want to start using the word abortion every time they talk about the issues. They say, look, Democrats are going to face very competitive races in 2022 and especially in 2024 when it comes to the presidential language. And if you noticed, most people who are promoting this never use the word abortion. They don't want to call it for what it is. What's abortion mean? You're aborting a life. You're killing a child, right? We can't say that. This is about a constitutional right. It's about reproductive freedom. I mean, they whitewash the darkness of what they're doing. But there is a movement right now. There's a large group out there, a diverse coalition of abortion rights groups. It's led by We Testify. And they want people to start using the word abortion. I can't get over it. I'm a little stymied by this, to be honest with you. They say that if that word starts to be used, if they can kind of brand the word abortion, they could destigmatize the procedure at what they think is a very critical moment right now. Planned Parenthood, the National Abortion Rights Action League, NARAL, They're two of the largest abortion rights groups. And Emily's List, which backs candidates that favors abortion rights, they urge Democrats to start using this word. So I sat back here and I thought, why? It makes no sense to me. Doesn't reproductive justice or freedom sound a lot better? You know? Well, they want to rebrand it. But to me, you know, my takeaway on this was it's really a darkening. Sin has a way of bedimming the intellect. When you sin, it makes you stupid. When you sin, it darkens the mind. I think this is ridiculous. I'm glad they're going in that direction. Because I think when you really ask people about it, most people, I think, are going to be opposed to abortion. Rhetoric is very powerful. Moving away from a discussion of giving women choice, and that was the big thing for a long way, to now fully embracing the word abortion, I personally think it's a mistake. You know, the vast majority of abortion rights groups say it's a wrong strategy. You know, others say, look, Democrats need to unapologetically embrace abortion. A process that starts with saying the word continues by talking about the procedure and making it a positive. They want to spin this to make it a positive. You know, we can't afford, they said, to have a pro-choice president who's afraid to say the word. Because Joe Biden, remember what Joe Biden said? Biden is a Catholic. Let's pray for him. Yeah, I mean that with sincerity. Let's really pray for this president. Let's pray for his conversion. He needs it. He needs it in a big time way. He said in 2012, there was a vice presidential debate going on that he says, look, I personally believe that life begins at conception. That's Joe Biden, right? He shares the same view as me then. I believe life begins at conception. You probably do too, right? I mean, science kind of has proven that. So Biden says, no, I believe that life begins at conception. But over the course, he's been in politics now about 49 years, 50 years almost, right? He has moved significantly to the left on the issue. So fast forward about 7 years from 2012, 2019, what happens? He came out against the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment prevents federal funds from being used for abortions. He came out against it. After he came under pressure from abortion rights advocates and other presidential candidates, he's kind of sold out on the issue. So, you know, this is and I don't want to go into this issue too deep because we got a lot to get into. I'm putting it on your radar. You know how I often bang my head against the wall when I hear some of the terms, diversity, equity, you know, inclusion, when we hear reproductive justice and freedom, when we talk about the Equality Act, when they have these very dark and sinister pieces of legislation that they whitewash with these beautiful sanitary, you know, words and titles and slogans that speak of freedom and justice, right? Something's going on here. Something is definitely going on. I just want to put that on your radar. One other story here, too, and we can talk a little marijuana, a little pot, a little weed, a little cannabis, as it's called on Capitol Hill. Speaking of Joe Biden, I saw a story about his son, Hunter Biden, right? And Bill Maher, who is a left-wing liberal, right? He's the host of Real Time. It's I believe it's a show. Is it HBO? I think he's on HBO. This guy recently has been saying stuff that has resonated with me. I'm like, good for you, Bill. I think Bill's a fallen away Catholic, too. Another guy we need to pray for, right? Powerful platform. But he's been calling things as he sees them. And I do respect that. I don't agree with a lot of what he says. But there's time when he is right on. And he came out recently, and he blasted the left-wing media for failing to report on the Hunter Biden scandal during the 2020 elections. He had a panel discussion on Friday night, and he offered a little history about how John Adams, you know, went during his presidency, they had different newspapers for different parties. And let me share a little bit of what he had to say, because he sees the same thing happening today with our papers and with our media. You talk about propaganda for one party or the other. Here's Bill Maher.
Okay, so the New York Post got a hold of what was in the computer. And, you know, because the New York Post is a Republican paper. And the New York Times and the Washington Post are the Democrat paper. That's where we are again, kind of. And the Republican paper, Twitter wouldn't cancel their account. Can't even report on this story. And now 2 years later, the New York Times and the Washington Post have come around to say, okay, there was something there. Now, what I said at the beginning, how it came to them. It came to them through Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon. So, yes, of course, when Rudy Giuliani says, I've got some evidence, you take that with a giant thing of salt. But right. But not 2 years. It didn't take 2 years. It looks like the left-wing media just buried the story because it wasn't part of their narrative, and that's why people don't trust the media.
And I love that. He's right. You know, he said he remembered reading a couple years ago when the Post, the New York Post, came across the story. Hunter Biden, if you're not familiar with it, he had a couple Mac laptops. He left them off at a repair store, never picked them back up. The owner actually copied the hard drives. And then when Biden, you know, came to the presidency or was releasing the elections right before, you talk about an October surprise, this comes to life. And it showed these connections that Hunter Biden had that could really compromise his presidency. And look, as an electorate, as a people, you and I should, before we go and vote for somebody, we should know if there are any ways they are compromised or if there's anything that could be concerning regarding national security or the economics or the presidency itself. And it came to light and everybody buried it. You know, the social media platforms, they rewrote their algorithms so you wouldn't even come up, right? And liberal media and left media, they wouldn't even talk about it. You know, they dismissed it. They dismissed it outright. And now what are we finding out? I mean, New York Times came out recently and they apologized because they said, yeah, there's something to the story, right? There's something to the story. But he's right when he says the left-wing media buried this because it wasn't part of their narrative. And that's really tragic in this great nation of ours. I mean, we can look at Russia and the banning of, you know, free press over there. You know, if you survey the Russians right now, majority of the people there think that what Vladimir Putin and their country is doing is right because they're only getting one message, the state media. That's it. And I think the same thing happens in our own country. When the mainstream media buries stories and doesn't allow open dialogue on them, you know, so the New York Post got hold of the computer They began to release some of the contents of it. And former Democratic candidate Andrew Yang, remember him? The last president, he agreed. When this was coming out, he basically says, look, right now, what are we seeing in the media? Trust in the media is falling very sharply. But you know the strangeness? It's falling across party lines. I don't know whether you're Democrat or whether you're Republican, right? I know I have people of all different political affiliations listening to the show. And this is not a political show. This is a news and issue, current event-driven show. I try to shine a moral lens or at least shine the light of our faith on some of these issues. But you can see how politics influences. Yang found that 69% of Democrats say that they trust the media. 69%, that's a lot. It's almost, that's 7 out of 10, right? 15% of Republicans, 36% of independents. So you're talking about 1.5 out of 10 people on the Republican side trust the media and 36% of independents. And you can understand why, right? If you're a Democrat and you only watch this mainstream, you watch this liberal media and they convince you that this stuff is a farce, you probably still trust them. If you watch other media and you realize, well, wait a minute, I'm not getting the truth here, your trust in the media really wanes. There's only a few places that you can get that type of information. So it's part of this erosion of institutional trust where one side feels like the media is on their side. And when it came to Hunter Biden's laptop story, it got buried and the timing of it really was atrocious. So we'll see. Anyway, just a little news there to follow up. So other big news, and I want to talk to you about this, and coming up in just a moment, Dr. Kathleen Birchelman will be stopping by. I spoke to her, I've spoken to her a number of times, but we've actually talked about it. And I reached out to her because we talked about the mental risks of marijuana. We talked about the impact that marijuana can have. I don't know if you're aware of this. I mentioned it briefly to you. I think it was Friday that I shared this story with you. The House voted on Friday to decriminalize cannabis on the federal level, and it will also allow for the expungement of some marijuana convictions. And you might be saying, well, why does that matter? Well, the legislation would just monumentally reshape our nation's drug policy and this decades-long war on drugs. And it would keep pace with states across the country right now that have legalized marijuana. Again, at the federal level, illegal. I think that's going to drop. It may drop. I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see how it shakes out. This same bill was passed in the House in 2020. It stalled in the then Republican-controlled Senate. And right now three Republicans joined all but two Democrats in passing the bill. And the bill is called the MORE Act. Or it stands for Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act. And it would remove, as I said, you know, marijuana from the list of scheduled substances and remove those criminal penalties if for selling or possessing the drug. But it would also allow the government to offer loans to cannabis businesses and impose tax on cannabis products. And the revenue would partly go to programs to assist those who have been adversely affected or impacted by the war on drugs. A Gallup poll in November, this is of last year that I saw, it said that 68% of Americans support the full legalization of marijuana. 7 out of 10 Americans want marijuana legalized. That's up from 34%. 34% back in 2001. So in 20 years, attitudes have changed. I don't know where you are on the issue, but you're more than welcome to join me. I thought today we'd take a look at the pros and cons of this. What's it mean? Hey, look, if this becomes legal, you're going to see big tobacco involved. You're going to see this all over the place. And I'll give you two examples very quickly, and then we can talk to the good doctor here. I know a person, they're a little bit older than me, and they grew up smoking marijuana. It's a girl, a woman. It has robbed her of it has made her apathetic. It robbed her of any future or career. I mean, she smokes it all the time, and really it might be a personality thing for her. I got another friend who I used to live next to in Pennsylvania, and he was a type A personality, worked for a big corporate company, and he'd smoke a little weed every day on this way home, you know, or when he got home, if he was like this type A bouncing off the wall, rather than having a martini, his wife's like, you know, why don't you go take a hit, right? And it would take him from, let's say, 110 down to a nice moderate 70, 75. So he'd be a little more tolerable, I guess. And certain people maybe can handle it better. Just like some people can handle alcohol better. What about the morality of it? I'm going to talk about that too. Is it moral when it's legal? Or is this different than having a glass of wine or two? There's a lot to talk about. And again, you can join me, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let me welcome to the conversation Dr. Kathleen Birchelman. And again, you can join us as well. Very gifted physician, and she is the founder of MyCatholicDoctor.com. It's a telehealth virtual care organization, and brings, you know, faithful physicians and other healthcare professionals to you, and you can do it over your smartphone, your tablet, your computer, and you know, prior to that, she was a pediatrician for Washington University in St. Louis, and did a lot of research on marijuana at the National Institute of Health. So I invited her to join us today, Doctor. Good to have you back. Thank you for making yourself available.
Thank you so much for having me, Drew.
It's a delight. So your thoughts, let's start with the legalization of marijuana. I think on the federal level, if they get enough votes, of course, this will drop, and then states are going to have to deal with it. I was surprised at how attitudes have changed in 20 years from 34% to 68% saying 7 out of 10 Americans, it should be legalized. Have attitudes changed? I'm assuming a lot more people are probably using it. And let's talk first, though, about what you see coming nationally at the federal and legal level.
I agree with you that I think this is going to go to the states, and then, you know, every state's going to have to make a different decision. But, you know, the real problem here is that marijuana, the attitude has really changed. I see it in all my patients. The attitude is, well, it's better than those medications. And people are using it to treat anything and everything, from arthritis to depression and anxiety. In the beginning, you know, the argument was, well, it's really good for nausea in cancer patients, and that's true. And I'll never deny that cannabinoids, the class of drugs represented by marijuana, can be very effective drugs for treatment of certain conditions. But that's just it. It's a drug, right? And every drug has its risks and its benefits and should be appropriately regulated. And that's not what we're talking about here. It's a very different situation.
Hey, you know, there are benefits though to it, aren't there? I mean, it's good for glaucoma, it's good for nausea. I mean, there are applications for it. Should it then fall under the umbrella of being prescribed by your doctor? Or can people, now that it's legal, smoke it and enjoy it like they would, let's say, you know, it's a Saturday night, they're with their friends, instead of having a couple beers on their deck or a glass of wine or two, they decide to smoke marijuana. You see that as being very different, right?
I do, because I think it's used heavily recreationally for just life stress, similar to having a glass of wine, as you say. But the problem is it's a different drug. And I hear that comparison all the time. How is it different than having a glass of wine? And the answer is it's a different drug that has different side effects. And for example, what about smoking and driving? There's no breathalyzer test. You know, how are we going to, we do know that smoking marijuana affects driving. How are we going to keep the road safe? Our society is not set up for the legalization of marijuana in terms of the effects it has on the rest of society. What about the effects on children, the effects of secondhand marijuana smoke? We know it affects the cry of babies if mothers smoke it, you know. We actually have a very good understanding of the effects of alcohol, and we have a good understanding of how much alcohol can be used responsibly. Jesus Christ drank, right? But he was never intoxicated, right? We're not there with marijuana. And I think there are some people that may be able to smoke marijuana, quote unquote, responsibly, but there's no definition of that. And we know with alcohol, we know that people, there's people that really can't ever have a drink because they have alcoholism, they have an addiction issue. And there's some people that can use it responsibly. But how do we define responsible use of marijuana? We don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because I've seen both ends of the spectrum, as you pointed out. You know, some who, gosh, they should never have started smoking because it has just sapped them of any ambition. And I see others who it almost moderates. And I know there are some medical benefits to it. But then the big thing for me always is the morality of whether or not one should smoke, you know, marijuana or not. I sit back and think, would Christ have smoked a bowl with his apostles, right? Would he have rolled a joint with these guys? No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't. He, as you said, had a glass of wine. Did he get drunk? Because I do think there's a difference. And correct me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, you can have a drink, you can have a glass or two of wine, depending on how big you are, what your body weight is, et cetera, and not be intoxicated, not be drunk. But with the THC levels in some of this marijuana now, that's really the intoxicant in marijuana, it's just a couple hits and you're going to be high, right? Am I correct in that? And is that where the difference when it comes to the moral factors play out?
Well, no, you're right to say that the drugs are not, all these different aspects of marijuana are not equivalent, right? So there's all different, you can smoke marijuana, but then there's like various different forms of THC, and there's edibles. And we do know that you can very quickly go have more of a dose of THC than intended, especially with some of the edibles. We've seen high, increasing and continuously growing rates of children that accidentally eat these edibles. I had a patient whose mother had a job working at a hotel, and she brought home what looks like an unopened bag of gummy bears and let her kids eat it. And they were all admitted to the hospital with neurologic changes because they ate the whole bag of THC gummy bears and they were young children. And, you know, so this is an increasing problem. So the drug, there's all these different forms of it, and I don't think the public really understands, right? But there's a conversation we're not having, and that's why are people using THC derivatives? And the answer is because they hurt, right? It's pain, it's anxiety, it's stress, it's depression. I think the number one reason why people tell me they're smoking is for anxiety, and they almost all say that it's better than taking an SSRI. My answer to that is, but the research hasn't borne that out. Mm-hmm. We know that SSRIs are actually very effective in treating anxiety and lead people to outcomes that are measurable, such as completing education and gaining employment.
Right.
But we don't see those same outcomes when marijuana is used for treating anxiety. So show me the data and I'll believe it, right? But I don't see the data. Right. And so I think we have to be honest about the science here about using marijuana as a psychiatric drug. And I think we have to be honest as Catholic Christians that the world's hurting. And that's why we're having this conversation. That's why we're talking about decriminalizing it. Yeah. Because everyone's hurting and they're looking for a path out. And as Catholic Christians, there's much better solutions to that hurt, right?
Amen. I love that. Anyway, we'll talk about it. Look, do me a favor. Hang on. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, if you're on hold, we'll get you on the air. The good doctor will answer your questions. We'll take your comments. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. Try that one more time. 888-914-9149. There is a line or two open right now, but that's about it. I'll grab as many calls as I can on the other side. If you're joining us, the marijuana looks like it's going to be potentially legalized on the federal level. At least the prohibitions on it will be dropped, and states will have to decide whether or not what kind of policies they're going to enact. So it might be more readily available to you, to your children, to your grandchildren, taking a look at everything from the morality of it to the future. Stay with us. Today's show brought to you in part by Sony Pictures production, Father Stu. This biopic shares the conversion and ordination of Stuart Long in movie theaters nationwide on April 13th.
All the issues, one place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today, taking a look at, of course, the House wanted to decriminalize marijuana, and we'll see what happens to the future of it. As my guest today, Dr. Kathleen Birchelman, has pointed out, she thinks it's probably going to go to the state level. And we're just taking a look at the ethics, the morality, the health benefits of this. We're going to take your calls and questions right now, too. But I'll just throw one more thing out. By the way, if you want to check out Dr. Birchelman, you can get her at mycatholicdoctor.com. Great way to check her out. And as I said, she did research on marijuana at the NIH, the National Institutes of Health. So I brought her on. One of the things, Doctor, before we jump into the calls, I just want to hit one other point, because some parents might say, well, my kids are smoking pot right now, but they're young, you know, they're in high school or they're college, and that's what they do. They'll grow out of it. There have been a number of studies that have looked at the effects of marijuana in the brain. I think there was the Lancet Psychiatry published a study probably a year or two ago. I'd read it talking about those who use high-potency marijuana on a daily basis, that they're actually more prone to having, you know, psychotic episodes than those who don't. And I think they defined high-potency marijuana as weed having a THC level of 10% or above, and I think it's pretty common on the market today. And, of course, there was studies done in Britain that looked at the brains of 14-year-old boys who said that they don't use the drug once or twice compared to the brains of kids who never used it. They found that there were some permanent changes in the brains of those who used it. I don't remember all the data there, but that to me is very striking, especially for young kids whose brains are still developing. Your thoughts on the psychiatric impact of this and on the physiology of developing brains, something parents should be concerned about?
Oh, yes. And we talked about this the last time you had me on, actually, yeah. About the impaired brain development of the rapidly maturing adolescent brain, and there's clear evidence that shows that the brain is not done maturing, and so to give that in adolescence, and there's a lot of growth, so to affect that with a drug that has an unknown consequences. Right. Is a really serious matter in the adolescent. So there's so many good treatments out there for these teens. You know, why are they taking it? For their depression, for their anxiety. I will never deny that cannabinoids are effective drugs that should be used in certain circumstances. But they need to be appropriately prescribed and managed by physicians. And the physician's going to be making a judgment about, is this the right drug for this patient, or is there a better drug, or what are this patient's options, and give those options to the patient.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a few calls for you. Paul is in Youngstown, Ohio. Paul, thanks for listening to us there. You're on the air with Dr. Kathleen Birchelman.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask, now, if a person has, say, a glass or two glasses of wine, and maybe they've relaxed a little bit after work or in a social situation, wouldn't that be a very mild form of intoxication? Drunkenness just being a more severe state of intoxication.
Right. You know, it's very interesting. The rule of St. Benedict actually even defines the amount of alcohol the early Benedictine monks were allowed to use. And so this question of, you know, how much alcohol is too much alcohol is as old as the church itself. And I think that's kind of what you're alluding to.
Yes. I never did understand exactly what was considered moderate alcohol consumption. I've read different studies over the years, and some will say two drinks a day, some would say several drinks a week, but there doesn't seem to be a consensus yet on alcohol. But probably, if I had to guess, I would say mankind has probably used cannabis longer, even before they had discovered alcohol. I don't know if that's correct or not, but that would be my guess.
Well, Paul, thanks. I'm not sure. Alcohol goes back in millennia as well. But, Doctor, you studied this. I don't know if you want to address that point or not.
Just the history of its use, of marijuana use. You know, I'm not an expert on the history of the use, I'm afraid to comment.
I don't know which one was used first. I don't know if anybody can prove that, but... to his other point, he's saying, hey, a couple glasses of wine, you get a little euphoric. If you drink a bottle or two, you get drunk, right? And the same thing with marijuana. I think what this really comes down to is, you know, if you get high, are you in an altered state of consciousness? And if you are, when your mind is impaired, then you have a diminished sense of making good choices. You know, if a person's high, it's more difficult for them to do that. And there are some moral ramifications with that. So, you know, maybe it comes down to the type of weed you smoke, too. Maybe the homegrown weed with the very low THC levels is a lot different. The weed of the 60s and your parents' or grandparents' weed might be different than what's being smoked today. So it's such a complex issue with a lot of different layers. It's not one size fits all, is it?
Not at all. And I think part of the problem with the comparison to alcohol, as per our prior conversation, is that, you know, alcohol has been really clearly defined in its societal effects. You know, if you have a blood alcohol level over X, it's illegal to be driving, right? And we haven't been able to do that with marijuana. So this how much is too much question is really, really hard to answer.
All right. Well, let's do this. Eddie's in Fort Myers, Florida. He has a question for you. Eddie, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking the call, guys. Yes, in fact, I'm a... And I live in Florida.
Eddie, I'm going to put you on hold because I'm going to come back to you. Your signal is breaking up, and we'll get you back on the air, okay? So just try to get into a little bit of a better cell signal and stay on the line. I'll have my call screener check you out. L.A., California. Mike, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Pleasure. First time caller. It's nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Mike.
So... a little history. I'm a Protestant. I was a 60-something-year-old father. I have three children, two teenagers and one a couple years younger. Mm-hmm. And grew up in the Venice area. And, you know, was a casual or probably a heavy pot smoker in high school. And then at some point in college, I got very involved in my church and dropped it. And then I think in the 90s, this was in the 70s, and then by the 90s, when my father passed away, I got more involved. Mm-hmm. But I'm casual, but right. A couple observations. One would be that I'm not the typical pot user. Everybody else I know that uses pot smokes it all day, every day.
Yeah.
And, you know... And believe me, you can pray for me. I want to break the habit because I also tend to, and I see with other people, if you smoke pot or you drink beer first, then you want to do the other. Mm-hmm. And I do that. I'll smoke pot and then I want to have a few drinks and just to relax and from the stress and everything. And so it's like a crutch. It's something that I want to get rid of. And again, and the other aspect would be I just see people all the time. You get to an intersection and you smell the pot coming out of cars and I go,
yeah.
And it's so much, I can tell you for sure. Yeah. It's way, way, way stronger than the stuff, the Mexican pot we used to get in the 70s with nothing. This stuff is
sure.
So anyway, I would just say that I'm really against it. And if they completely outlawed it, I'd be 100% in favor of that.
Huh.
And again, I'd say pray for me to figure out a way to stop doing this. Yeah. And it kind of really started getting heavy during COVID because of boredom and things. Anyway, so I really appreciate
what
you guys are doing.
And, I appreciate the contribution. Blessings. Thank you. It's good to hear from you, and it's good to hear the sermon process, Doctor, that he's going through on it. Casual user, not Catholic, against legalization, which is quite telling. It's going to be a decision for a lot of Americans, too, when they go into the voting booth. As these more and more states come on board, you're going to have to decide which way you pull the lever on this issue for a lot of people. And let's talk about that, too. Let's talk about where the church is on that issue. But before we do, let's bring Eddie in. I think that was his comment. He's listening in Fort Myers, Florida. Eddie, good afternoon. It's good to have you back. I hope your signal's a little better.
Hey, I can see. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, but go ahead. We'll give it a shot.
Veteran. And I do have my marijuana card from Florida.
Yep.
And I've been using it for now a few years. I'm about...
You know, Eddie, I'm so sorry. Eddie, the only thing I made ask, you have a marijuana card. You've been using it for years. The line that my call screener is telling me is he wants to know what the church's view on marijuana is. I guess, doctor, if you have a medical, you know, need for it, it's completely moral. How would you define the morality of using marijuana today, even if it is legalized across the states? If it's, you know, illegal, that's one thing. But let's say, you know, it becomes legal at the federal and state level. What are the moral issues of smoking marijuana?
You know, for 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has been committed to health care, and we've believed in the scientific method since the scientific revolution, right? So the morality here is that if it's an effective medication, it can be used. But if it's resulting in any harm to self or other, then it should not be used. And I think the problem here is the risk of rationalizing that something's being used for a good, for a medical treatment, when it's really being used in a form of self-harm or harm toward society, or at least putting an individual or society at risk because they're smoking and driving, or because, and I think this is probably the biggest issue, you have real crosses that you're carrying that the Lord wants you to use to bring you to holiness, and you're just trying to dull it all away with a drug.
That's such a good perspective. You're right. I mean, so many of the saints talked about the value of suffering and using it, allowing it to be meritorious, to be redemptive, to be conversionary and transformative. And so often, you're right, we dull or mute that or don't use it for our spiritual benefit. Doctor, I'm going to take a short pause. I have to. I'm up against the clock. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll grab more calls. I know phones are stacked here. Stay with me on the other side. If you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. I appreciate your comments and your thoughts. Our conversation will continue right after this. Don't go away. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Get informed and get connected. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The chaplain's coming up in just a few minutes. Good afternoon. It's good to be back with you. If you're just joining us, we're taking a look at some sweeping legislation in our country that could monumentally reshape U.S. drug policy and expunge some marijuana convictions. The House, of course, voted to decriminalize cannabis on the federal level. We'll see what happens with the Senate. I think it's an inevitability, as I shared with you just moments ago. Gallup did a poll in November. It said 68% of Americans support the legalization of marijuana. That's 7 out of 10. So I've invited to join me today Dr. Kathleen Bertelman. She has done research on marijuana at the NIH and He's a very gifted physician, founder of a great organization as well, mycatholicdoctor.com, and you can check her out. We're taking a look at everything from the psychological to the physiological to the moral implications of this. And, Doctor, before I jump into the phones, very quickly, there are some people who make the case, and I've had them on the air in the past, that said marijuana is a gateway drug. A lot of other people say, hey, it's not. You know, I don't see people who smoke pot getting up and, you know, being violent, although others say that might be the case. Do you see it as do you see it similar to alcohol? Do you see it as a gateway drug? I mean, how do you view this?
I think it's very dangerous to give a one-size-fits-all answer because every brain is unique, right? We're all made what's one-size-fits-all is that we are all made in the image and likeness of God. That said, every brain is different. And I think that for some people, marijuana can be a gateway drug. For other people, it's not. There's a lot of people like that last caller that you know, are routinely mixing alcohol plus marijuana. It's just dangerous to generalize.
All right. It's a legitimate question. I've had somebody in drug rehabilitation therapy saying the majority of the people who used stronger type of drugs, this is one of the common denominators in it. But you're right. I mean, not everybody does it. I know people who smoke weed and they've never done anything beyond that. So it's a good, solid answer. Katie in Orange, California. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Good afternoon. I just wanted to share with anyone who's thinking about whether this is something they should be doing in the long term when it's legalized in their state. You know, my father-in-law, he smoked weed since, you know, he was a young man in the 60s and 70s, so he smoked his entire life, and it hasn't always been, you know, high THC. It's been pretty low back in the day.
Sure.
And it seems that the effect on him, as he now is nearing retirement, is that it has chipped away at his resiliency. So he's never been a terribly, you know, social butterfly or outgoing creature, but as he's sort of dabbling in things that he'll want to do in retirement, like take a class in something that he's, you know, never gotten to take a class in, or join a group that he's never had the time to join. He's tried some of these things out and quit because he has like a social anxiety issue where, you know, perhaps if he wasn't medicating away his feelings, you know, you'd be in a situation that could be somewhat, you know, anxious. It can make you anxious, right? So first time meeting people, you know, or a class or those kinds of situations, we all have, you know, nervousness on the first day or whatever kind of thing. He doesn't seem to have the ability to overcome just that basic, not over the top, just a basic level of discomfort in those settings. And as a result, he's dropped things, he's quit things.
Yeah.
And it's looking like the idea of doing these things in retirement is not going to happen because he's spent his life chipping away at his resiliency instead of learning how to handle emotion and deal with situations that are, you know, a little bit uncomfortable.
It's such a great call. Katie, thank you for bringing that to the conversation. And doctor, let's talk about this. Cannabis use long-term, is there a link to increased anxiety, other psychiatric type of disorders? I know the mainstream media largely downplays and ignores this. I don't know the type of research that's been done. You've done this. We've talked about psychosis. We've talked about schizophrenia. Suicides have even been linked to this as well. What about anxiety?
Well, and it's very hard to do these studies well because people with anxiety are often self-medicating with marijuana, right? But what we can say is the question isn't, is it okay to use marijuana for anxiety? I think the better question is it the best drug for a person with anxiety? And the answer to that is no, that there's other drugs, especially the SSRIs, that can be used very effectively. And if you don't care for SSRIs, there's a million and one other approaches. And I love this caller because what she's talking about in secular language about resiliency, that, you know, he's been medicating, maybe some social anxiety, and the result is he hasn't grown in resiliency. And that, you know, the religious language to express the same story is that this man has carried a cross, and he hasn't grown in virtue through that cross. And the Lord allows all of our crosses, right, so that we can grow in virtue and holiness. I mean, that's what St. Ignatius of Loyola tells us, right? we lose that opportunity when we just medicate it away. So not only in the secular language, you don't grow in resiliency. In religious language, we're not growing in holiness, we're not growing in virtue, and we're not trying to work out our salvation with fear and trembling.
Well said. Katie, thank you very much. She's seen it, and it's just, I think it's a cautionary tale, too. I mean, are there long-term consequences for, you know, regular use of this? And I guess more data will come to the fore in the future. Let's sneak another call in because we only have a few minutes left. We'll try to get as many as we can. Emmanuel is listening in Los Angeles. He's got a comment for you, Doc. Emmanuel, good
thank
afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Drew. Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for taking my call. Well, C.S. Lewis said that God doesn't judge the raw material, but what you do with it. So, obviously, if I'm going to do some cocaine, obviously, it's going to drive me to do stuff, you know? Or if I'm an alcoholic, it's going to want me to get behind. The decision-making is not there, right? Or the good decision-making is not there. So, but from my own personal experience from using, I kind of see it like it's becoming like gluten. The sin, because you kind of are not satisfied with just a little hit in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. Instead, you may want to have another hit later on. So the discipline to be able to control it isn't quite there, you know, unless one is already disciplined. That's why I wouldn't condone it. That's why I wouldn't want anybody else to do it, because I just wouldn't condone it, mm-hmm. because, you know, it drives me to want to go ahead and do it again. So I'm kind of anxious to do it again. And I'm with the other caller, you know, like, pray for me, because I really don't want to have any vices.
Amen.
I just want to be free from it all, honestly. And it doesn't lead me to do bad things.
Right.
Drew, you know, it's been morally ingrained into us that it's evil by man when they place it on the drug bust next to, mm-hmm. like, cocaine and guns and all of that. So, like, immediately, like, in years and years and decades of them doing that, then automatically we're going to see it as evil. But look, the Tilma from San Diego was made of hemp. Yeah. So, you know...
All right.
I don't know.
Emmanuel, first of all, I will pray for you. I promise you that. I'm going to pray for everyone who's calling in here and anyone who struggles with this or who, I love what he said to doctor, you know, I don't want a vice, you know, and that should be all of our prayers. We should be praying for an increase in virtue. And your theme today is one of suffering too, embracing the suffering. So often we try to medicate because we're stressed or we're in pain or whatever it may be, but there's a spiritual value to embracing our particular cross. But you heard his comments, Doctor. I'll let you respond.
No, and I want to thank you for your honesty, Emmanuel, and please know of my prayers for you too. And I think that, you know, that this, it's what you said, you always want a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And that's where I think we have to be honest with ourselves that yes, cannabinoids are effective medications and should be treated as medication appropriately prescribed and monitored by a physician, which is very different than legalization, right? And because having that self-control is to not want more of an enjoyable thing is just contrary to the human condition.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, I have less than a minute to go. Brian in Pennsylvania was saying, hey, if you just want to relax, what do you think about that? If you just want one hit or two to relax, what would you say to somebody who is in that mindset and that's what they use it for?
Yeah, my question is, are you just going to have just one hit or two? Or are you going to be like Emmanuel and want a little bit more, or the prior caller and want to mix it with alcohol? Are you going to choose to drive? Are you going to choose to smoke around people who are going to inhale that secondhand smoke? I think you have to look at the whole picture.
Hey, Doctor, thank you. I wish I had more time. I'm up against the clock, but I hope people will check out your wonderful organization, mycatholicdoctor.com. It's a telehealth virtual care organization that brings very faithful physicians like Dr. Berfelman and other healthcare professionals to you on your digital platform. Up against the clock, we'll pray the chaplet when I return.